that, well, you're, and I've had people tell me so-and-so said it was a sin that I was going to therapy because I just haven't given it to God. And I think, you know, is it a sin to go to your dentist? Should you just pray about the canal, right? Should you just, God could cure that. He could cure cancer, right? Yeah. He can do anything. Yeah. But he also allows us to take initiative and be our own advocate sometimes in our health care, mental care, physical care, and say, you know, what has he given me agency over? What can I do? And trusting our discernment and his leading in that, and not looking like we're a failure if we're distressed.
Welcome to the Fit and Faith Podcast. FIT is an acronym representing founders, innovators, and trailblazers who are looking to live a life wholly, fully, authentically, and truly fit. A space for us to connect on the raw, real stories of mind, body, and soul alignment of entrepreneurs and kingdom leaders. I'm your host, Tamara Andress, and this podcast isn't like the cookie cutter interview experience. I've been coined the entrepreneurial rabbi, and so we do go there, unscripted. No matter how far, wide, deep, or high the there is, my desire is to see people rise from the inside out into their greatest calling by sharing their truest stories, talents, and tips. As a purpose activator and brand builder, I believe our successes and failures are derived from who and whose we are, not what we do. But strategy and vision are equally as important to the mission. So let's cut to the chase together and get fit in faith.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Fit and Faith Podcast. Rochelle, we are so grateful to have you.
Thank you for having me here, Tamara. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah, we have had a couple of conversations prior to this one, and you all, there's several ways that I like to bring people into this community. Sometimes I'm really, really close with them. Sometimes I have no idea who they are. And sometimes it's a little bit in between, right? Like that's really the only three options that it could be. I don't often allow a stranger to take the mic. But what I know truly about Rochelle above all things is that she loves the Lord, and the way that she integrates it into her gifting and talents through mental health is not only something that I know is a part of a needed movement in this generation and this time, but generations that have already passed and generations that are to come. And so I am hopeful with your excellence and your ability to speak Jesus into the mental health realm that people are going to find freedom in a whole new level than traditional mental health conversations lend itself. So we're going to get into that conversation today, and we're going to find out how and why that's a part of her story, because we know most people's passions come from their agitations. And I want to hear about that from you, Rochelle. So thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, I'm so thankful to be here. Thank you. I love your work and excited to have this conversation with you.
Yes. Well, let's jump in. Let's jump into your backstory, and then we'll get into your current story.
My backstory. Okay. Yeah. Well, I help women and men in my clinical practice overcome emotional overwhelm. So my specialties in complex trauma. So really helping them kind of find the origin of their distress and break free from that. And I think that's, you know, that every person has a different story. They may have similar backgrounds or situations, but they have something unique with them and their body, mind, brain, spirit, you know. So it's fascinating work. And I just love people being able to break free from that and really, you know, just live more fully in how God has called them to be. So I've been doing it for over 20 years. My specialty is in EMDR. I don't know if you know what that is, but
I have become familiar in the last couple of years. So I'm excited to hear specifically from a specialist in it. But I do know that there's been some powerful transformations just from friends who have experienced it. So I definitely want to chat about it.
It is really powerful. Eye movement desensitization reprocessing. So that's what I do in the office. And basically it just helps in a fast way, rewire, retrain your brain, like neutralizing traumatic material. So that's what I do in my day job, you know, in my office is EMDR and specialize in complex trauma, which is people that they might be very high functioning in their today life, but they have you know, they might have panic attacks pop up, or they might have somatic or body symptoms and not quite know where they are. And oftentimes people that don't even know that they've had trauma from childhood, it can actually be complex trauma. So
yeah, that's my story. Like, that's so much of my story. I had no idea that everything that I was doing was from a suppression tactic, so much so that this past weekend I was sitting with a bunch of people and they were asking me about my diet around intermittent fasting. And diet being a way of life, not a diet for a fad, right? Right. And I told them about the transition that has occurred since I started intermittent fasting. And prior to that, how much I used to sleep. And most people, if you're talking only about the body, they're taking that gluten intolerance as the suppression. And now, therefore, you're sleeping. But it was actually me choosing to eat as a suppression coping tactic. I would wake up at 3 a.m. couldn't go back to sleep and tell myself, even while pregnant, that I need cereal, that I need to eat. And so I would comfort myself back into essentially lethargic sleep. And I was sleeping 3 hours a day and 12 hours at night. And wow. That's a lot of sleep for a mom of two under the age of two and an entrepreneur of two businesses, right? So there's something going on and it's not a gluten intolerance. And I was telling them the transition of how it was not just a body conscious thing. It was a release and it was a freedom exchange that occurred because of my finding out what was that root trauma. And so I think that there's so much value to that, but most people just think it's the top layer. And so your work is to go further to the deepest layer.
I mean, it really, and I loved, you know, reading your book, just the variety of things you did to kind of unpack that and detoxify. And one of the things that I think really is at the heart of getting to a core issue, which I think is just mental health. I think there's so much diagnosis, you know, I don't participate with insurance, but if someone does, you have to give the diagnosis to get the treatment. But, you know, they're just slapped with a diagnosis of anxiety or bipolar or, you know, or people just say I'm type A and I'm just stressed out. And they don't understand the way that those things, you know, the origin of where they came from. And you really have to be just very curious. And it does take a, you know, unlayering. And with anxiety, for example, which is the most common, I really look at kind of five different areas. You know, there's, you know, am I living my life in a way that there's environmental things that are impacting that? Is there emotional regulation? And that's, you know, where people feel overwhelmed by their emotional states. Usually that comes from, you know, childhood, not necessarily, but mostly, and then unresolved trauma, and then genetic variances. I'm, you know, I can tell you that story later, but we have a daughter who had a pretty serious brain injury. And so that really led me into understanding a whole nother layer of kind of things that influence mental health that we walk around. We don't really understand that those genetic variabilities. And then, like you mentioned, there are a lot of people that have had trauma more likely to have gut issues. So a lot of times there are things in that realm. So you do really have to unpack it and be able to understand. And I think that's part of lifting that shame, you know, is to say that I'm not just broken. I'm not just weak. I'm not stressed out. I'm not designed to be this way. And understanding where those behaviors were once helpful. So they can, like you were saying, at one point, it was the only option you had.
Yeah.
Especially things in childhood. You can't fight or flight.
Yeah.
You can't change the system.
Right.
We're very adaptive. And I think things that we have repressed oftentimes or not, it was our norm, or God just allows us to not see it. Kind of like we protect our kids' eyes and we say, you know what, you're not ready for this. You can't handle this yet. So you're not going to see that movie. You're not going to listen to that. I think God does the same thing with dissociation and people that are able to disconnect. And
wow, I hadn't thought about it from like the lens of God the Father, but surely from the parental perspective. And you know, you go through that season when you're uncovering and unpacking all of these things, and it feels really hard, and there's a lot of conflict with your earthly relationships, especially parents or people who protected you or you thought were protecting you, regardless of what your childhood trauma or lack thereof might have been. It's a fulfillment conversation. And the thing that I think is really interesting is that there's that season where you like blame right? And you shift everything to them. And then there's this aha and awareness moment that happens, especially if you're a parent, that you realize, oh, wow, they were doing the absolute best that they could with the information that they were given. And they were blinding me. They were keeping my ears plugged with intention to serve me. And in fact, they just didn't know enough about mental health, enough about my prefrontal cortex, enough about the massaging right. of the humanity or the emotional intelligence that I needed in order to sustain a healthy lifestyle outside of that home. Right. There was two things that you said I wanted to bring to surface. In addition to that, you talked about the diagnoses. And as you said it, I thought, wow, how often do we label ourselves something? And God himself, Jesus himself, never labeled anyone other than child of God. So the woman at the well, everyone called her lots of things. I was going to say whore out the mouth,
right.
But you know, slut, whatever terminology people want to use nowadays, adulteress, all of those things. But he called her woman, which is at the root how he made us as man and woman. And her identity shifted in that moment. And so I love that you don't take health insurance. I love that your diagnosis is not you are ADHD or you are depressed or you are anxious. Now, are those things that you're using for coping? Yes. But are they necessarily who they are? No. Their identity right. is as a child of God, and you help them break free of that. So I'll mention right. the other thing later, but I want you to share about that.
Well, I think it's just a little bit of a dead end. Sometimes it's helpful to someone to say, okay, yes, I do have depression or this is, and have a name for it. But I think if you stop there, you don't understand the why behind it, because there can be many reasons, again, why someone is anxious, why they're not sleeping, why they are caught up in perfectionism, or why they can't let themselves rest. And many times those adaptations, we think of people maybe being afraid and not being able to go out and do things, or being in bed and being tired. But oftentimes those adaptations are, I'm overfunctioning at my job. And some of the people that I've met, I mean, on the surface, you would never know and worked with, because they're highly functional. Their adaptations serve everybody but them.
Oh, it's so true. It's exhausting. Right? It's so exhausting.
They are exhausted, and they're very oftentimes high achievers, and on the outside have it all together, but there's tremendous pressure inside. And so if you just do the diagnosis and, you know, you're given a medication that's, you know, less than, I think, 47% effective, and that's in the short term. In the long term, it's even, you know, less effective usually, but you don't really understand what purpose that originally served and how you can relieve that burden. So that's why I don't particularly like.
No, I honor it. I honor it so much. The other part of the conversation that you mentioned the word curiosity, and I think we stop being curious when we get older, right? We start getting into this rat wheel. We start getting into this knowing of, like, this is the expectation of me, where when we're little, we'll go on a walk with grandma and we want to touch every blade of grass, and we want to pick up every dandelion, and we want to look at everything that flies by, and we need to talk to every neighbor. We're so incredibly curious, and we're called into that childlike being with intention.
Right.
And it's not just on the beautiful God gifts that are around us and our surroundings. It's what did God give us on the inside, and how can we create freedom in our life based on that root history? And so I think it's so powerful what you do, specifically now as we've shifted into this virtual realm, right? Like, you've had a practice for so long, and now you're at this place where you're like, I know there are more people that need my support, and COVID. So you're helping people virtually. So talk to us about how you help someone, even just through a screen, go through that process with EMDR. Can you do that through a screen?
I have done it some. That's not my primary focus, because when I do EMDR, I'm doing it with complex trauma normally. And so I want to make sure that somebody's, because it can be a little destabilizing. I mean, you're really, as someone goes through EMDR, you are really I don't want to say you're re-experiencing the trauma, but you're going through those memory networks of the sensations and the emotions. So, somebody would have to be at a certain level of having already knowing that they had destabilization and that they were going to be okay, and that they weren't just sitting on the other side of a screen completely alone in that, because oftentimes they were alone in the trauma. So you don't want to re-traumatize.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that makes sense.
So I do have a coaching program where I work with people, and I have, you know, I've online videos, but then I also do face-to-face coaching on individual, and I do a lot of inner child work and some groups and individual online. And you know what, really that human connection, I think it can be achieved through the screen, but there's just something so valuable too about in person that's a wonderful option if people have it. But yeah, telehealth does, there are some benefits to accessibility. And that was one thing I kind of wasn't expecting. I started doing online things because of many reasons. But one of the things I found was that the consistency, when I was going through something, you know, really difficult in my own life, I thought, wow, this is probably how my clients feel when 1 hour a week they get attention to this or relief, and then it's a whole nother week. And so with the online option, it does allow you accessibility to really make those incremental changes. And I think those changes are daily choices and activities, and it can sometimes feel like work, but it can also feel like something you are just desperate for and you need on a consistent basis to really change your neural pathways. And that's the thing I think I really always tell people is every set of day, you have a new set of neurons. Now, left unchanged, we are just such creatures of habit that, you know, because of neuroplasticity, our brain just does the same thing again and again. But it's so exciting that we can change it and we can renew our minds. And just the very, you know, scripture, be not transformed to the world, but to the renewing of our minds. To renew is to resume after an interruption. And there's so many things, whether it's trauma or just daily stimulation and our culture, there's so many things that interrupt our sound mind. But it's so good to know that we can renew our minds. We can renew our brains. And so I like to encourage people that there's many ways to do that.
I think there's so much power in that conversation, so many angles and ways that you could continue to further the curiosity of it. But curiosity does take time, and curiosity even of self is a continual process. The whole concept of my book, Always Becoming, is the fact that I am not anywhere. I am yet to be, right? And therefore, every day I have a desire to become. And it takes effort, it takes energy, and it's not just a one-time check in the box. And one of the chapters was about trainers need trainers, because it has that perspective, right? And it's talking about coaching, it's talking about therapists. Mm-hmm. And as adults, we just think we're done. Once we are a teenager or a college athlete, perhaps, or even a pro athlete, your coach is out of the picture. Well, now you're just on to life solo. And yet right. We need people. We need army members who are willing to fight, who have actually preceded us. We need the generals who have been trained in order for us to activate in the army the way that we should. And that's in the fullness of mind, body, and soul on every level. And for me, I've spent over $100,000s in order to get my mental health and clarity to the place that it is now. I was in therapy, like you're saying, multiple times a week, both singularly and with my spouse, in order to create that understanding of communication with myself in my quiet place. When I went to go eat the cereal in the morning, when I went to go to sleep again, wait, why? Right? Right. When I went to take the drink of alcohol, wait, why? Why do you need this right now?
That curiosity. Yes. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt
you. It's okay. It's that consistent need of remaining curious. And so I am curious, because I said, let's take it back to your why. Can you walk us through perhaps your curiosity when you went to education for this? Or was it something you unpacked personally and wanted others to be able to break free from?
I don't think that I knew exactly why. I just always loved deep conversations and intimacy. I was blessed with a pretty easy childhood, not because I did anything well. My parents were just relatively healthy and good people and raised me in the church. But I was always a people pleaser, a lot of codependency. And I think I just wanted to fix people and be the helper. And that was just always really appealing. And then I went through my studies, and our field is very secular. And that kind of swayed me for a while. But then I knew as I got out and I started really in my late 20s doing Bible studies and really getting into God's word, I have been in private practice from the very beginning because I wanted the freedom to be able to do that. And I think what you said about our stories, like for instance, EMDR, my son and I witnessed a fatal accident when he was 6, and the person flew off the motorcycle into our car. So it was a really gruesome scene, and he had PTSD. I knew about EMDR, but I hadn't witnessed it. So I was doing everything I knew to do to help him. And he was just really distressed. And it wasn't like the accident happened. It was about 3 months later. And so I got trained in EMDR, and then I just saw how really understanding trauma and attachment in the brain, it just became a fascination, and just really wanting to help those people that I couldn't, that talk therapy really just doesn't work for oftentimes. But being curious too, I think once we even grow, because I saw everything through a lens of trauma then. Where's the trauma? Because I knew most people had it. Most people that have longstanding, they have it somewhere. And so I would always be looking for that. And then my daughter, I think I shared this with you, but 3.5 years ago, my daughter had a severe brain injury, and it was a roller coaster. And she'd had a concussion 6 months prior that we thought had healed just fine. So when she went on the roller coaster, it was secondary impact. And so she ended up being, out of school for, it's been about 3.5 years now, and she's going back part-time this semester, but it was just a really dark, scary, terrifying, you know, when you see your kid just in just immense suffering, and you don't know when it's going to end. It really, so the curiosity, my husband practices functional medicine. So just he would listen to lectures, medical lectures from all over, because we weren't getting any answers, and we had tried, we've been to probably 12 different specialists, and we ended up flying and getting genetic testing and really understanding. And it gave us the explanation. Okay, here's why she's not healing. Here's the things, here's the supplementation she needs. Here's the genomics. Here's the things that we can change to help her heal. But I remember sitting in that office with her, and I was desperate. I mean, this guy was like a celebrity to me by the time we got there. We've been on a waiting list, and I'm just so hopeful. And he starts talking about the amygdala, which is the part of the brain that activates fight or flight. So he starts talking about the amygdala and being in fight or flight. And he said something about the anxiety. And I said, well, she doesn't have anxiety. I mean, she had never been an anxious child. And he goes, oh, well, I'm talking about the medical term. You know, all anxiety is inflammation, he said. And it was just like another,
Right.
We had been through the whole, we do have someone in our family with gluten insensitivity. And so we'd done all that. We've just been through a lot of health journeys in our life. And I am embarrassed to say it's so long since I've been to the doctor. I am blessed. I have kind of that thriver's guilt, when you have a sick kid and you're like, I'm the one who should be sick. They should be well.
I've never heard that phraseology before, but that is true.
I've never said it, but I mean, survivor's guilt, but I feel that. I felt like I should be the one with the body breaking down,
Right. But I feel like there's that's a book title right there.
Okay.
I mean, think about it. It's really wild to think through, because that often happens. How many parents are in that perspective? How many spouses are in that perspective? How many children who see their mom or dad or anyone above them in that perspective? And so there's freedom obviously in it, but it's also the knowing that you're utilizing their story to help serve everyone else based on your level of curiosity and your level of health. So you're now the vessel that's being utilized in health to help support.
Right.
And I think that there's a whole conversation that could stem from that, but I'm going to take note of it.
Well, yeah. I mean, and since that time, my husband, he did get trained by the same specialist we took my daughter to, and we offer neuropsych genetic testing, but it was before that point, it was never a curiosity of mine. Oh, is this a genetic predisposition? Do you actually have thyroid antibodies? All the things that could cause mental health. And I think I probably had people in treatment for a long time that were doing all the work and doing all the things. And yet there was something that was untouched that could have been simple. And since that time, there have been people who've said this, say, you know, this has saved my life, like having this information. So just that layer that we can always know more, we can always learn more, and there's always someone out there. So it really just clinically made me think that in mental health, we look through even a pretty limited lens there too sometimes. And it's so powerful to look at someone and say, and that's all we wanted on our journey, was someone to say, you know what, I'm not sure, but there's someone who does know, or this is something we could look at, or this is something we could look at to help explore and open our minds to what are the ways we could really break free from this. And, you know, I think God, here's one other thing I want to say about mental health. I think in the Christian community, and I might be wrong, this might be only the people I've seen, but there is a huge amount of stigmatization. And of course, if someone comes in and they're feeling like they're not a good Christian because they know how many verses there are about do not fear, and yet they're still feeling anxious, of course you do want to look at, well, am I living out of alignment? You know, am I anxious because I'm having an affair? Well, then you should correct that.
Freeze, freeze.
So of course we want to look at that. And of course we want to know that we've gone first and said, like, what is this? You know, I mean, there is such a thing as we feel conviction and we feel angst about times when we're not in alignment. But I think oftentimes people feel so stigmatized. And I see this in a lot of Christian literature that, well, and I've had people tell me so-and-so said it was a sin that I was going to therapy because I just haven't given it to God. And I think, you know, is it a sin to go to your dentist? Should you just pray about the canal, right? Should you just
come on?
God could cure that. He could cure cancer, right? Yeah. He can do anything. Yeah. But he also allows us to take initiative and be our own advocate sometimes in our health care, mental care, physical care, and say, you know, what has he given me agency over? What can I do? And trusting our discernment and his leading in that, and not looking like we're a failure if we're distressed.
I 1000% agree. And it's the knowing that, like, even every example given when there is a miracle in the Bible, God's first activation of that person is not on a dime, let me fix you. It's a question. It's a prompting. Do you want to get well?
Right.
And then he asks them first, before he heals then the lame man who cannot walk, he says, get up and take your mat. He doesn't say, you're healed, let me fix you really quick. Okay, I fixed you, now get up. He, by faith, said, in your action, I will heal you.
Right.
And therefore, it takes us getting curious. It takes us pursuing Jesus through alignment, but utilizing those generals. You're literally like a general in what you do. And so often people will come to me, and this is a different lens of healthcare, of alignment, but they'll come and they're like, I have this incredible business idea and this is what I want to do. And I'm like, that's amazing. What a God deposit. And then I go, let's put that to the side and let's find out how your heart is. Because if it is not heart, head, home, health, you cannot worry about a handbag at that point, right? You cannot worry about what comes next. If the first component, the identity piece, is not intact. And I know this and I teach this because I did it wrong. Right? I did business first. Then I did the branding thing, because in order to have a business, you have to have a brand. And then later I was like, oh, who am I? And all those businesses and all those brands went to the wayside. So it's about identity. It's about being, then brand, then business. But the point of that is if you need to get curious about how you're actually serving and doing ministry through your business, rather than thinking that this is just a good idea. It's a really good idea to have a successful career. It's a really good idea to have an incredible marriage and everything else be to the wayside. But you have to concentrate that there is a covenant experience, and covenants have synchronicity. I love that you and your husband do both realms of functional and what would they call yours? The opposite to functional, but functional.
I just call it mental health.
Yeah, functional and mental health together. Yeah. It's a beautiful marriage, no pun intended, to your relationship, right, for people to have the full angel army around them and then pointing them in the direction of Jesus. So I titled this conversation, Jesus and Healthcare. And I'd love for you to talk to me about, like, how do you infuse your faith? Is it something that's on the the tagline of your business? Do they know? Is it something?
It's on my business cards, and I speak at my church.
Okay.
And I include it in my posts. I'm not doing a ton of posting right now, but so in my town, we live in a city where it's like 120,000 people. So it's not.
Oh my gosh! Big. I was like 120. Do you live in the same house? So that's small.
So I think in my community, I've been doing it long enough. And like I said, I speak at my church and it's on my business cards and people just know that that's part of it. I have had atheist clients come in and I have some that through maybe me being a small part of that, but more important people in their life have come to Christ. So I don't like to say that I wouldn't serve someone who's a Christian. And but I just like for people to know what they're getting. Right. That this is because if you're going to someone for coaching or a therapist, they should know, because all of us have our own perspective, our lens, our filter through which we see the world. And we can't, as much as we want to be just objective, we can't just leave that at the door. And so I like to make that known so that people understand who it is that I am and that I respect them and love them regardless of where they are in their faith journey, but that's where my perspective comes from.
Yeah. I'm curious, have you ever heard like flack from people about that?
I think if I went to at conferences and things, the trainings I go to, Christianity is really not very well embraced. And I've only had one person they were coming in as a couple. My office has Christian books on, and it's not a secret. It's
right.
But I can't even remember what it was at the time, but I said, I don't know if this book would be of any help to you, but I mean, he was an abusive person. He had injured his wife. I mean, he was an abusive person. His heart wasn't the place and he got mad.
Right.
So, but generally speaking, no. Generally speaking, the people who come to me are paying to come to me. Right. So it's a good fit or else they wouldn't come.
Right.
So I think I think there is censorship right now a lot. And so sometimes you find yourself like, is this gonna, I really admire how, bold you are and people who are, and I'm increasingly trying to be that. The whole world of online is very relatively new to me within the last few years, but that's another thing I think, when you just, like you said, you went through your own work, when I was really, we try to fix things from the outside in, like you were talking about with the business, we try to do that. And it was never really I never had the ambition. I just thought I would be in a comfortable office forever with a fireplace and a cozy, intimate setting. I could sit with people all day long. But when my life situation changed because of my daughter and all of those things, and I started to make shift, I did feel like it was God leading, but it was inside out. I actually broke a tooth. I went to the dentist and I had broken a tooth and they said, oh, you've been under stress. Yes. And it really was
a little
wake up that, all the things I was teaching people to do on a daily basis, I wasn't doing some of those things in my own life. And so for me, it was really the stillness, because I was good about reading and I was good about researching and I was good about finding, but it was just the being still and getting up early enough to really do that. And I would just meditate on the name of Jesus all the time, because I feel like my brain was front loaded. I'd done Bible studies for years. I knew a lot of the stuff in my field, but just allowing it to get to that place and just be still with the circumstance, because like you were talking about in the Bible, healing. I remember one of the things that really stood out to me during that season was hearing our pastor referenced something that Joni Erickson Tada had said. And I don't know if you know who she is, but she's 72 now, but she's a Christian author and leader and speaker. She was a quadriplegic at 17. And so she's lived this whole life as a quadriplegic. And I remember, I'm older than you, I remember seeing that show on TV when I was young and just being kind of horrified, like, oh, I wouldn't, she dove in it. Like, I wouldn't ever want that to happen. And she would paint with her mouth. And I remember seeing that as a teenager and then hearing about it you know, 30 years later and thinking, oh, she's still around. She's still in her suffering. And what he shared was a passage about her waking up, doing battle every morning, that knowing what was going to happen, the caregiver was going to come and bathe her, and it was going to, and it was hard, and facing every day, and just that people would say, oh, you're so strong. And she'd say, it's, that smile is hard earned. And sometimes we are in long suffering seasons. And so as much as the healing is what we're praying for and hoping for, like God's timing, and sometimes it is a season of long suffering, but we can, but she has still arisen from that in terms of how she has encouraged, and God can work through even that suffering. And so sometimes I would feel like, oh my gosh, I don't have anything to give today. I'm in tears. I'm, you know, breaking down in my garage, and I'm going to go sit with people for 8 hours with trauma. And I would think, I don't know if I have much to give today, but he would work through that. And I would find that it was such a gift to me to be with them. And oftentimes their situation would speak to me. So he's good even in while we wait, he's doing healing of another kind.
Yeah. And I think that there's so much power to that statement. And I reference on this podcast all the time, Galatians 5:22, and talks about the fruit of the spirits. And one of the fruit of the spirits is forbearance, which is long suffering. And that doesn't make sense. And that's not, I don't pray on my knees and be like, God, can you please give me forbearance? No. I'm like, give me the joy, the love, the healing, like all of the good things I want. But the hard things, like forbearance and self-control, are hard things to have. But it's such a sense of resilience, and our God is a God of resilience.
Right.
And so it's the knowing that he is standing firm. He is that cornerstone that we're able to lean on in order to walk through those hardships that always are used for good. Think about the people that you've been able to unlock and will continue to be able to unlock because of the curiosity, because of the stillness that you've now experienced firsthand in your own life. And then knowing that there is him in the midst of all of it. And it's just giving him glory ultimately, right. But it doesn't mean that it's easy, but he never promised that it would be. And we're always waiting for the blessing. And we were at a conference this past weekend, and we were talking about, you're waiting for the blessing, but the blessing is you. The blessing is the fact that you have breath. The blessing is the fact that you're still standing. And even the quadriplegic, funny that you mentioned that, because I actually met a quadriplegic yesterday in the airport. I was going to my gate, and I looked to the side, and I saw him, and I was like, hold on, with the people that I was with. And they're like, where are you going? And I just went right towards him. I beelined to him, and I'm like, you're a warrior. And he was like, thank you so much. And I wanted to know the story. And he was in Afghanistan, and his name is Travis Mills. And of course, he started an entire foundation. He's got children since that happened. He has his wife and his other daughter. And he was like, here, he gave me his book. I exchanged my book with him. He did a video and showed me how his prosthetic spun, his hand spun 360. And I was like, I can't do that. He can do things that I can't do, right? And so when I said, do you mind if we snap a photo together? I'd love to talk to you and get you on stage. He speaks around the world already. And he said, yeah, but please let me stand up. And in that moment, I'm like, golly, how is this crazy? He's got his two prosthetic legs. He stands up so fiercely. I help him take off his mask because he can't do it. And his smile was just beautiful. And I thought, God, how good is he that he is capable of healing someone mentally? Because that took mental effort for him to get to that place, to be able to smile and freely give of his body as a resource to God and glorify him in that experience. So mind, body, and soul, talk about alignment of a quadriplegic. Right. That's like, if he can do it, I can do it, right?
Right, exactly.
So wild. So I don't know who you were talking about, but that is immediately, so thank God for the reference that I was able to sit with you in that moment and that example.
Yeah, it is amazing. It is amazing. And I know that just from the years, and that's kind of what I would draw on, the years of seeing people who, as they're describing what they've gone through, are just horrendous, evil things that have been done to them many times, and just awful circumstances. And yet, you know, maybe they don't see their own resilience and gifts, and how strong and how faithful God has been to shine through them. And that was one of the things that I would try, as much as you're a mom and you want to fix it. And if you're a people pleaser, even if it's not our kid, you know, we want to fix it for people, and we overwork and other people try to overwork other people's lives to fix it. Just remembering that he was with my daughter. Like you're saying, he's in that circumstance, in the things I can't fix, he can. And that we really, I think that helps with fear, when we can say, you know, I am not the answer for everybody else or everything. I could just do what I can do, but I'm limited. Yeah. So try to,
be an agent. And I think above all things, you mentioned the word shame, which is surely my mission, to just obliterate shame and activate purpose. And to know that that's literally what you do every time you're in those conversations. So it's a kingdom mission. It's a massive one, but I know that it can happen. And it's testimony by testimony that you've experienced, testimony by testimony that I've experienced, and all the other people who stand in their specific fields, because this can be done through functional medicine, like your husband is doing. This can be done through business. This can be done through, food. It can be done through so many different ways. It's just a matter of how we show up authentically in our expertise and our gifting.
Right.
So thank exactly. you. Yeah. Yes. All right, you guys, I want everyone to follow Rochelle Walsh. She is an incredible human being, and it's just been such a joy to have you on that. Thank you for your own long suffering. And I'm excited to hear, as your daughter enters back in to schooling and all of the different realms that she aspires to do, that she will do it with greatness.
She's doing so much better, and it's a huge praise. And I know it will be powerful in her life too. So
good. Thank you. Yeah. I want them to get in touch with you. I know you mentioned all of your coaching and abilities of virtual experiences and online courses. Where, because of your social media, do you want them to go? I have links all attached here already, just so they hear if they're listening.
Yeah. I mean, if they were interested in a coaching experience, they could just message me, through Instagram or my Facebook page, just send me a message and I could get you put on my email list. I'm not super great about emailing all the time, so you won't be bombarded every once in a while. I'm like, I should send out an email with some tips. So my social media would be great.
Amazing. All right, y'all. It was Rochelle Walsh. It was such a joy. Jesus does exist in healthcare, and it is not intended for us to hold anything mental health oriented or in general as a stigmatism to what God calls them and who God calls them. So hold your mouth, hold your tongue, and help, support, and love above all things. We love you guys. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks so much, Tamara.
Hey y'all, it's me again. I hope in today's episode you sense an ignite to an ember within you. Something mentally, physically, emotionally, or spiritually moving that creates and sustains a fire within your journey. Before you go, let's solidify the flame. I'd love for you to take a step right now in declaring your takeaway by snapping a pic of the episode you tuned into, share your sparked moment, and tag me at fitandfaith_podcast or me personally at tamara.andress on Insta. I hope that I can keep you accountable and also share you with the greater community of the Fit and Faith podcast listeners. We're totally in this together. Community over competition is the motto, right? I'd also be incredibly grateful if you took an extra second to leave a review on iTunes or your podcast listening app. I'd love to feature your thought in the next episode and give you and your passion project a big shout out. You know I'm a writer, so I love words, and I can't wait to read what you have to say. I'm ready to fuel the flame with you together. And until next time, blessings over your joy, health, wealth, and wholeness. Tune in next time.